Welcome to Keep Calm and Cook On. I'm your host, Julia Tertian. Each episode of Keep Calm and Cook On features a meaningful interview and answers to listeners' questions about cooking. Thank you to OXO for making this episode possible. OXO makes many of the kitchen tools that I trust the most. To find out more about OXO and their products, head over to OXO.com. That's OXO.com. Today's episode with Hawa Hassan and Beth Linsky is about friendship and mentorship and how both can transcend age, race, and place. Hawa is not only my friend, she's also on the advisory board of Equity at the Table, the digital directory that I started last year. And we're also working on a book together called In the Bibi's Kitchens, which will be recipes and stories from grandmothers from the 8 African countries that touch the Indian Ocean. Hawa was born in Mogadishu, Somalia. She lived in a UN refugee camp in Kenya with her mother and 4 other siblings before moving to the United States in 1993 when she was 7 years old, with a group of refugees but without her family. It would be another 15 years before she saw her family again in person. That reunion took place in Oslo, Norway, where Hawa's mother had relocated with her new husband and Hawa's other siblings. Much of Hawa's regrouping with her family after 15 years apart happened in the kitchen. That's when the seed for her company, Besbes, was planted. Besbes, which means chili in Somali, is Hawa's line of condiments. She currently has 2 sauces on the market, a red one with tamarind and dates and a green one with cilantro and coconut. They are amazing. Hawa started the company because she wanted to shift the narrative about being Somali. In her words, what could be a better way to do that than through food? To get her company off of the ground, she surrounded herself with strong women, including her mother and including Beth Linsky. Beth is the creator of the New York-based jam company Beth's Farm Kitchen, which she founded in 1981. She ran the company for 35 years before selling it in 2016. If you've ever been in New York and purchased a jar from the Union Square Green Market, you know I am telling the truth when I say it's some of the best jam around. I spoke with Hawa and Beth together recently at Beth's apartment on the Upper West Side. Note that you might hear some very authentic New York City sounds in the background of this episode. We talked about the evolution of their relationship, about what they think about the term mentorship, and more. In the age of startups and Shark Tank and all of the other buzz about entrepreneurs, we don't often see or hear the nitty-gritty of how a small business, especially a food business, goes from idea to success and the people that make it possible. It's been noted that mentorship helps to drive success, but we don't often hear about how people find their mentors or what the mentors themselves get out of the relationship. In sharing some insights about the relationship, Hawa and Beth show us a really beautiful example of what mentorship can look like. It's not just good for business, it's also good for humanity. We couldn't be more different, Hawa once told me about Beth, but that's my girl. Will you guys introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Beth Linsky, and I used to be a jam maker for about the most of my life, probably 35 years. And I sold my business, and now I'm just searching around for jobs to do.
And what about you? Who are you?
I am Hawa Hassan, founder and CEO of Besbes Condiments, the first line of Somali products on the market. I'm also the co-author of the forthcoming cookbook In the Bibi's Kitchen.
And I've heard of that one.
Have you? With a person named Julia Tertian. And also advisor at EAT, Equity at the Table.
Awesome. So Beth, you used to run Beth's Farm Kitchen. Can you tell me a little bit about what you did before?
Oh, before I was making jam. And I did, even though Hawa might not remember it, but there was a time when I did work in the kitchen and make the jam. And even my husband made jam and we developed recipes and we just did everything as a small business, just like it was really just the tiniest business possible. And I was fine. You know, I got into the Union Square Green Market. Well, I got into the Green Market and then I got into the Union Square Green Market. And, you know, I just kept going and you meet more and more people and it, you know, it was easy to sell and I liked to sell. So I would stand and sell in the market. And I worked it out so that I could be in New York part of the time and in Columbia County. And it ended up, I was only in Columbia County 2 days, and I was in New York 5 days. But in the beginning, I was in Columbia County most of the time. And that's where I made the jam. And that was the reason I started it. Let me go back a moment. But the reason I started the business is because my husband was working in Albany. And I thought it would be good as the good wife if I would be living in the same area. So I had my apartment here in New York, but then we had a house in the country. So my house in the country became my business. And I started it because I was a caterer in those days, one of those illegal ones that have been around a lot.
Meaning like out of your house?
Out of my house.
Got it.
This apartment catered many, many.
Yeah.
Many, many events.
I won't tell.
Well, I think there's so many people in the food business have were in this kind of businesses. And I use the Green Market, which had just started, and I use them as my source for vegetables and fruits and everything. So I knew a lot of farmers. And I was up in Columbia County, which has a lot of farmers. So it was easy for me to say to the Green Market, which had just started, I would like to be in your organization, and I will use all local product. So I used local product the whole time I did the business. I developed great connections with farmers. And it was fun. It was really a lot of fun. That's some of the stuff that I did.
How, will you tell us a little bit about your business and when you started it and, you know, what kind of prompted you to start it?
Yeah. So the idea came from just spending Ramadan in Norway in 2014. With my family. One of the main reasons.
That's where your mother lives.
Yeah, that's where my mom and my siblings live. But one of the main reasons I really wanted to have a business that spoke to Somalis or about Somalis was I just wanted to change the rhetoric of being immigrant and other. And I thought an easy way to do that was through food. The business launched June of 2015 with the help of Beth. I had found Beth on the internet. And I had legalized the company at the end of 2014. And so I spent the first quarter of 2015 looking for a co-packer or a mentor to help me figure out what I was going to need to do next in order for me to be a full-blown business.
And what did you, you know, put into the Google search to end up finding Beth? How did you?
Co-packers in the Hudson Valley.
Yeah.
I was in Portland, Oregon, working at the time, or I was there just for the day working for Nike. I used to model before. And at night, I would go home and frantically search. And it was on a Monday evening in April of that year. And I researched small co-packers in the Hudson Valley. And up came an 800 number, and I called, and a man answered. And it was around 6 p.m. New York time. And he said, oh, God, you're too small for me, but this woman, Beth, can help you. And he gave me her information, and I called, and I thought I was going to leave a voicemail. But Beth used to spend Mondays and Tuesdays in Stuyvesant Falls. So she answered the phone, and we spoke for about an hour and a half.
Wow.
And I said, actually, it was February, because I ended up coming to New York in April to scale the product with you and Linda.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Beth, can you tell me about that first phone call? Do you remember it?
It was fun because we just sort of hit it off right away. You know, that's why we ended up talking for like an hour and a half. She was asking me questions I really knew the answer to.
It's a nice feeling.
Yeah. It wasn't too hard. So, I mean, it was just, we just hit it off quite well. And I was able to answer questions. And I like the idea of helping people. I've always had the feeling in my business that you have to be generous in order to, you know, you give out and you keep giving out and something mm-hmm. will come back. And that's how you get to be a better business too.
I'm just nodding.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great advice. Can you explain, Beth, to anyone who might not know what a co-packer is?
Oh, sure. A co-packer is somebody who they have a kitchen. Mine happened to be a home kitchen, but I was a true 20C license and I could do commercial canning from there, and I could can for other people too. And I was able to, like, Hawa could come in and we could go over, decide on her recipe, and then we could make that in our kitchen and process it completely and label it, and then she could sell it. she didn't have to get a 20C license. We had that 20C license.
You have two sauces at the moment.
Yeah.
Red sauce, green sauce.
Yep. We have a coconut and cilantro, and then we have a tamarind and date sauce.
Oh, they're delicious.
Yes.
Did you, how long between that first phone call you guys had, the hour and a half phone call, and when you first tried the sauces, Beth?
Oh, I have absolutely no recall.
I remember I mailed them. We did an NDA in February, and then I mailed them over to Beth and Linda. And then you contacted me and said, the green sauce is delicious. So that must have been like March. And then you said, but this red sauce tastes like tomatoes.
And that was part of the process.
Yeah,
figure it out.
Exactly.
But you figured it out together.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Me and Linda, we went back and forth. Well, I came back to New York April 15th, 2015. And the next day I rented a car and drove. And that's the first time we met in person.
Right.
And were you at that point when you had reached out to Beth and then, you know, you guys started all this trial and error and everything, were you making and selling the sauce before or you were just getting into the business? You said you had legalized it, but
yeah.
Were
you selling? I had no recipe. I had nothing. I couldn't sell. I needed to have a schedule to process before I could sell, which Beth helped me figure out through Cornell University.
So you had the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but not the product yet.
The only thing I had was sauces I was making in the kitchen having friends try.
And Howa, can you tell me a little bit? So you guys, you have your phone call, you have your trial and error, you go into business together. You know, Beth is co-packing your product. Can you tell me a little bit more about the evolution of your relationship?
Yeah. I mean, so first we were two people getting to know each other that day on the phone. And I got off the phone feeling very hopeful, like this idea that I had could become something because I had just found somebody who knew everything I didn't know. So I was really excited to come back to New York and meet Beth in real life. I think we could have met in New York, but you thought it was a better idea if I drove to the Hudson.
Well, we wanted to get you to the kitchen.
Yeah.
Because we also wanted the kitchen to meet you.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, and Linda's become a big part of my life as well. She's this fiery Italian cook who bosses me around.
She bosses everybody around.
She's she's wonderful. No.
Yeah, she's the one who nailed the formula.
Yeah, and she still till today makes the sauces. But I would say it was business and now it's more like family. But very early on, it felt like we were people who'd known each other all of our lives. We'd come from very different walks of life. But, you know, I think I stayed the night at the farm that first day I went.
Definitely.
And then after that, I would go back and do, you know, I would hot fill if it needed to happen. If somebody needed a sub in into the kitchen, I would drive myself out there. I would stay. I stayed at the house by myself many times.
I know.
I even brought a friend on a Saturday to make sauces with me, you know. So if we had a big order coming in and the kitchen couldn't do it, I would do it myself.
So how long a period of time would you say it took for your relationship to kind of evolve from this, you know, two strangers meeting on the phone to this sort of family kind of feeling. Yeah,
it didn't take very long. She was just a natural and she became part of the flow of Beth's Farm Kitchen as far as I was concerned. You know,
I've even stayed the night here.
Yeah. It's just, I like people. So
Well, you like me.
I liked you. I did.
Now people
still
me.
Do.
You guys are so sweet. What would you say now, Beth? So you 2 years ago is
yes.
when you
November.
Do you say what word do you use? Retired?
I retired.
Yeah.
But I still work.
Yeah. You remind me of my mom. I'm doing air quotes, retired, but is the busiest person I ever met. So I understand. So now that you are not, you know, on campus, so to speak, at Beth's Farm and everything, how would you guys describe the role you play in each other's lives now?
It's hard for me to say because she's really busy now and I can't always catch up with her.
So for a while we had this thing where we would meet every Friday for a croissant and coffee at like 8 o'clock in the morning. And then Beth sold the business. And she did that in November of 2017.
Well, it had been 17?
Yeah.
It was 2 years ago, so I thought it was 16.
Oh, then maybe 16.
Yeah.
So we went from seeing each other all the time to now seeing each other when it's really important, or I go down to Fulton Stalt Market and I hang out with you, or you do events and I come, or you come and support me at my events. Oh,
we have met at Bread's Bakery a couple times.
Yeah.
Just because
your spot.
That was the spot where we were in.
That was our
the
spot.
Market.
Oh,
at the market.
It's so close to Union
Square.
It's
right close to Union Square. So when I see now at Fulton Stalt Market, I still go to the market all the time to pick up product because we buy from the farmers that I knew so well. So I'm always going there and picking stuff up. And so it's still easy to meet there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now I think we meet more on special occasions, like your birthday or before the holidays. But we talk on the phone quite a bit. We text a lot.
And she gives me a lot of leads and she invites me to things, which is great.
I need my cheerleader.
You guys are each other's plus ones.
Right. Now she's going to find me a job.
And do you guys use the words like mentor and mentee for each other? Do those words apply?
I think we just started doing that because
because we didn't realize what we were before.
Exactly.
Was there a moment?
My mentee.
Yeah. Was there a moment when you realized this?
Well, now people ask when we're together what the relationship is. And I think it's very easy to say that and move on because oftentimes even when we're with people, we just want to be together. We want to be in other day we were just in conversation in a big group. So we say that quickly to just give people context and move on. But I'd say you're my family.
Yeah. We're close like family. Yeah. So it's kind of, I mean, mentor and mentee is easier, and then people would sort of understand. But like when you spoke at that resilience thing, that was like, you know, you're my good friend. I mean, that's, you know, that's, I didn't have you as my mentee.
Yeah. Well, I feel like in the best kind of examples of mentor mentee relationships, there's a deep and loving kind of friendship there.
I agree.
What is the word mentorship? How would you both define it? I feel like it's something people talk about a lot, find your mentor, that kind of thing. But what does that actually mean?
Well, you know, I don't think people use it the same as it was used in when I would have learned the use of the word.
How so?
Because a mentor was a person who was much higher level than you.
Got it. Yeah.
And you really looked up to them with respect, you know, and you needed a mentor, sort of like a godfather, to get you into things and things like that. But I don't think that that's so much the way it's looked at these days.
Sure.
I think it's much more familiar.
Yeah.
More like a family familiar.
Yeah.
Because it's, to me, that's what it looks like.
Or informal, I would say. Yeah. And sometimes too, I think that, or not informal. I think what I was trying to say is not even familiar. It's much more formal. It's like this 1 hour that's been carved out for you to sit down with somebody, have coffee with them, tell them about your problems, how they can help you, and then you part ways, you know? And it's like on the schedule once a quarter or something like that. And then you have people like us who it's much more familiar.
Yeah. Much more.
And informal.
And informal.
Very informal.
Yeah.
I feel like often when you hear about mentorship, it's often what the mentee gets out of it. Mm-hmm. Beth, what would you say, you know, whatever you call, whatever you guys are.
What do I get out of it?
Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons that I always like to be generous, twofold sometimes, I get out of it is that I'm learning more from the people that I'm talking to. That's what I feel. I mean, I'm always learning marketing from Hawa. I mean, I don't have the guts to do some of the stuff she just walks right in and does. And I like to do presentations, but this young lady can do them much better. I have a lot to learn about that. And I like that. I like to be able to learn things. So that's what I get out of it. That's what I feel that I'm getting out of it.
That's really cool. Do either of you have any advice for someone, you know, maybe like a young person getting into, you know, a new field or just anyone kind of switching gears, getting into a new business? Any advice for that person if they, you know, if someone was like in your position, Hawa, and they found someone in your position, Beth, how to kind of navigate that? Like, what are the steps to reach out to that person?
Mm. Well, I would say don't come looking to take.
Mm.
You know, it's really difficult to go to a stranger and off the bat ask for something immediately. I think that our relationship, I started with telling my story to you very quickly, right? On the phone that day, you were so intrigued. You said, oh my goodness, I'm traveling to Africa coming up and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. Oh, you are just this and that. Come in and meet us. So we had an intimacy very quickly that then went into a deep friendship that now we use this formal word of mentee and mentor. But if you're looking for someone, I would say, be ready to give. Like, our friendship and relationship has grown so much more since Beth gave up her business, because now Beth is a part of my world, you know? I think that we're always learning from each other, but I'm always pulling her into my world, you know?
Which is fun, yeah, for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's great to get pulled into your world.
Yeah. And this relationship won't end. Like, I think that oftentimes people are just looking to get something and then they walk away, you know? And
discard.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I needed that person when I was starting my business. Like, you're going to be the grandmother of my kids. I'm going to be Nana.
Wait, I was about to ask, what are you going to be called? Nanny?
You want to be Nana?
Or? Nana? The Nona? The Nona. Italian one? Nona. The Nona?
Bubby?
Bubby.
No, Bubby, please.
Bibi?
Oh, Bibi. You can be Bibi.
Oh, my gosh. Amazing. And Beth, if someone, you know, you answered that call. You picked up the phone when Howa called. You stayed on the phone for an hour and a half. You know, went into business together. What was it that Howa kind of told you that made you sort of stay on for that long and you gave that much time?
Oh, I would think that it was just that she was so open about telling me the story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a fascinating story. Yeah. I mean, I didn't have that experience in my life at all. So I love hearing about somebody who was moving through her life and, you know, been to many places, sure, and done lots of stuff. And I hadn't done any of that.
So she told you a story. She didn't just ask for something off the bat.
No.
It sounds like that was an important part.
I didn't feel that it was being
used.
So, you know, it was mostly a story. Yeah. It was mostly just, you know, the history of her life.
Sure. And do you have any advice, Beth, specifically for someone who, you know, is looking to get into the food product business? Like someone who's been told, like, maybe they make a certain, you know, sauce or something and their family is like, you should put this in a bottle. What do you say to that person?
Well, say
I wish I could capture your face right now.
Well,
hey, Beth, to teach you, she's in the business of consulting.
Which is, costs money.
Yeah,
it should. Money. Yeah.
I still give away all my information for free. Damn it. But anyway, I think, when I started my business, there was nobody to ask, because I didn't know that I needed a scheduled process until at least 6 years into my company. And I was told by another farmer that I needed.
What does that mean? I'm sorry. To
schedule process, it means you send your recipe to Cornell. And I didn't even know that I needed a 20C license, because there was nobody who ever asked me. Just nobody asked to see my license. So I didn't know that I needed one. And so there was nobody to give me the rules of the road. And now there are many organizations that do that. And they do it for free. Like small-scale food processors have a website and they have the information. And Department of Ag and Markets gives the information away for free. But now there are places to go, and you just have to figure out where they are. But they're not as hidden as they were when I started the business. But I have lectured on this very topic many times at the NOFA conferences and stuff, and gone and said, you know, how do you start your business? Well, you have to get your DBA or your LLC, and, you know, how do you do that, and why do you do this, and why do you do that? And those are all things, and it's good to get a lot of that stuff done before you even get the whole product. Mm-hmm. Because the whole product, if you really know what you want to do, you're going to get that product to work. So getting at least the background of whether you have the ability to get the insurance and how much is it going to cost, which is personal liability insurance, business insurance, you at least find out how much they're going to cost. And they don't all have to go, have to cost a lot of money, because you used LegalZoom, didn't you, for something?
I surely did.
Yeah. So, I mean, they don't, you don't always have to go to a lawyer. My husband happens to be a lawyer, so.
It's convenient.
Most of my stuff was done through him. So, but I mean, it doesn't have to cost a lot of money. And there, but you need to do all of that stuff. You have to learn how to cost out your product. Mm-hmm. How much is your product going to cost? And how would I find out how to cost it? How much you want to sell your product for? $6.99. Now, is there any place in the grocery store where there's products just like yours for $6.99? Or are they all $4.99? You know, are you going to be that special that you can be $2 more than, or do you have to sell in a different type of store? You have to figure out what your store is, who's your competition, all these kinds of things.
It's all the stuff around
yes.
the thing.
And then, and what do you want your label to look like? Mm-hmm. You know, should it be really prominent? I had many people over the years tell me to change my label, and I never did. And I'm really glad. I really stuck it out. you know, when everybody was putting fruit on things and changing this and changing that, I just stuck it out with that same label that I had. It was basic, classic, and it stood out in a store. You wanted to stand out on the shelf.
Yeah. I feel like that kind of reminds me of a big thing I was thinking and, you know, and anticipating talking to you was that so many people write about, you know, whether in food kind of media yeah. or just media in general, everyone's writing about the new thing. You know, what's new, what's next. And I feel like we don't always hear the stories about something that's stuck around for a really long time. And I mean, you did that.
It's stuck yeah. around a long time.
Yeah.
And it's still out there in the market. The new people who bought the company, they changed the label, but they kept the same swoosh. And they didn't change that.
Uh-huh.
It's very interesting that yeah. they didn't. They took the ingredients off the front, which I always put the ingredients on the front so that people would see that there was hardly anything.
Which is
in
against
there.
Ag and market rules, but Beth did that anyways.
Well, they thought I was nuts to do it. I said, but that's, I don't care. I'll put it on the back for you, but I want it on the front because I think that it's interesting that somebody should know that's in the most important part of this product.
Is what's in
is
it.
Is what's in it.
You know? I get, yeah.
Why would you, you know. And if it says apricots and then sugar, that's really important.
Mm-hmm. What's your, do you, this might be the worst question. Do you have a favorite jam?
Apricot.
Apricot.
However, business-wise, I like strawberry rhubarb because it's sold the best.
So yeah, it's so delicious. There's a jar of that, I think, in my fridge now. And are you, this also might be a very unfair question, but Beth, when it comes to Best Best, are you a red or a green girl?
I'm a green.
You're a green.
Yeah.
And how do you enjoy it? What do you put it on?
We use it just mixing it in with, I do a lot of vegetables uh-huh. things, so we just mix it in with the vegetables.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, I know there's lots of other ways to use it.
If it's not broken. And Hawa, do you have a favorite jam?
Oh, the strawberry rhubarb.
Yeah.
And I like the, what is the curd, the lemon curd.
The lemon curd.
I can eat
eat that with a spoon.
Mm-hmm. I used to, and then I got chubby.
And do you have a preference between your sauces? I've never asked you this.
Okay, I've never said this out loud because you're not supposed to.
You don't have to choose. But if you have a preference, I'm just curious.
You're not supposed to like one of your kids better, but I think the green sauce is my favorite.
I'm going to just go on record and say that I think I use the red one more.
Oh, yes.
I just want to give the red sauce some love. And Grace the other night put it just on chicken breast and put them in the oven. And that was it. And it was the best dinner. So good. So good.
It's I mean, it's really useful.
It's great stuff.
You don't have to be, you know, make a Somali recipe.
No.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that.
Can I ask you, actually, the, you know, you talk all the time about sort of changing the narrative. Mm-hmm. And what do you feel has been the narrative, and what do you hope it will be?
I think one thing that people, when people talk about Somalia, they talk about famine. Mm-hmm. They talk about women being oppressed because they're Muslim. They talk about displacement. They talk about refugees, and that is outside the oppressed part. I think the rest of the story is in there, But I also think that Somali people are some of the most entrepreneurial people on this planet. They're resilient people. They start over. They're family oriented. They're all these wonderful things. And so that's what I want. And the narrative doesn't have to be just based on Somalia. These condiments are becoming condiments from the continent of Africa. So, you know, when I have a line of 20 sauces from 7 different countries, then the narrative will get bigger and include more people.
I like that you say when, not if.
Yeah.
I don't play around with ifs and can'ts.
But I think it's really good to have it so that people will begin to realize that the people of Somalia or Yemen, they eat. And they have family life and they sit around a table and they enjoy each other. They're not always just oppressed. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe it appears that way, but they are real people who have real lives.
You guys have such a beautiful relationship, and I appreciate you sharing more about it. It's really cool.
Thank you.
Can I ask you each just one final question?
Yeah.
That I just love to ask everyone. Do not overthink it. First thing that comes to your mind, what was your favorite thing to eat when you were growing up, like when you were a kid?
Hot links.
Hot links?
The one I remember, we always called my mother a bad cook. Until we moved to Connecticut, but just before we moved to Connecticut, there were TV shows with, you know, like Julia Childs, and so she learned to cook through the TV shows. But prior to that, it was pancakes and cornmeal mush.
Mm.
Those were two things that we had, and both of them were things that my dad cooked. Mom made oatmeal with lumps.
Uh-huh.
Didn't like it. Anyway.
But your dad's pancakes.
My dad's pancakes and his cornmeal mush.
And cornmeal mush, kind of like hot cereal?
No, cornmeal mush is fried. It's basically, it's polenta, but it's made in a loaf pan.
Yeah.
And you cut it and you deep fry. You don't deep fry it, but you fry it in bacon grease.
Kind of almost like a fried hash brown, right?
Oh,
like
yeah.
It's like mashed down like that.
Yeah.
Sounds delicious.
It's delicious with maple syrup and butter.
Yeah. Mm. Or jam.
Well, I didn't learn that jam part till much later.
And will you just elaborate a little on the hot links?
Yeah, it's what I ate the most. I wouldn't say it was my favorite, but it's what I had access to. Mm-hmm. I used to go to the Shell gas station on 38th and Genesee, and Mr. Henry would give me a loaf of bread, and I would go get my hot link every night for dinner. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I would have that with some ketchup, and I was set for dinner, and sometimes I would have a bag of Doritos.
Sustained you.
Talk about sustainable food.
That sustained you.
It did until I went to school the next morning for breakfast.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Amazing, isn't it?
I don't look like I missed the meal, though, do I?
Well, thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we get to our listeners' questions, a quick word about OXO, who helped make this episode possible. Why do I have so many OXO tools in my kitchen? It's because I trust them and they're reliable, and they help my work as a cookbook author be dependable and accurate. They also help my time as a home cook feel much more relaxed. I appreciate OXO's commitment to make every day better every day. They approach their tools just like I approach all of my recipes. They notice things and solve problems and see opportunities to improve the process, like their small citrus juicer, which I honestly can't live without. Perfect for one lemon. It catches the seeds and everything, and the juice goes directly into a measuring cup that has a spout. It's so handy. Thanks, OXO, for supporting Keep Calm and Cook On. Want to check out OXO's products? Just head over to OXO.com. That's OXO.com. And now it's time for some listeners' questions. If you have a question for me, just send me a DM on Instagram at Tertian or drop an email to keepcalmandcookonpodcast@gmail.com. One word, no punctuation. And my wife, Grace, is here to ask the questions.
Hi, JT. You ready for question number one?
I'm ready. Are you ready to ask it?
Always. Okay. Question number one comes from Anina in Switzerland, who is looking to add more tofu to their family's diet and is wondering if you have some suggestions for incorporating it in a diverse array of dishes.
So I'm going to turn the tables and ask you, Grace, to answer this because you were once vegan. And whenever we eat tofu at home, I always ask you to cook it. So I was wondering if you could tell Anina and everyone how you make it.
Okay, so I love tofu. We cook with it a good amount. And my favorite thing to do is to press it in between like a whole bunch of paper towels, which you can reuse, or between a towel so you get all the moisture out. And then we follow a tip from Samin Nosrat, which is to essentially marinate it in a bowl. And you just put a bunch of soy or tamari or any other thing that you like that flavors it and let it marinate in that. And then you can either bake it in an oven pretty low, like what do you think, like 250, 300, around there for like a few hours. And it gets like a lot of bite and it gets really chewy. And I like that a lot. You can also cut it into cubes and just brown it really well in a pan, like leave it there for a bit until it gets like quite a crust on it. And I think that's a nice thing to add just about anything. You can add it to pasta, rice, veggies. That's great.
Anything cooked low and slow in our house, I leave to Grace because she is a lot more patient than I am. So thanks, Grace, for that answer.
I also just forget about things more than you do. And I think that's a convenient excuse for browning. So your next question comes from Ardent Homesteader on Instagram, who wants to know if you have any ideas for ways to use up an old and until recently forgotten about jar of preserved lemons.
I love preserved lemons, and I think a great thing to do with them is to puree them, the whole lemon and even some of the brine that they're packed in. Puree them with some olive oil and then a ton of fresh parsley and cilantro. Even a little mint is really nice. Do that in a blender or a food processor, or just finely chop everything if you don't have either one of those. A little paprika or ground cumin is nice in that mixture. Season it with salt, and then you can use that on anything. So you can marinate pork or lamb or chicken in it before you cook it, or you can use it for a sauce on any of those kind of cooked meats or beans. Use it to top hard-boiled eggs or roasted squash or sweet potatoes. If you have a bowl of hummus or a bowl of yogurt, you can put kind of like a big spoonful of that mixture right on top. It's good on everything.
Your next question comes from Purple Turnips, such a good screen name, who says, hello from Cape Town. They would like to know if there is an easy way for someone who cooks but struggles with baking to get into the daunting world of baking chemistry.
So if you are comfortable cooking but not so comfortable baking yet, I think the best thing to do is to get a really good teacher. And I think the best way to do that is to get a really good baking cookbook and follow recipes that are written by someone who explains things well and who has tested the recipes really thoroughly. So you can learn from someone who not only knows how to make great stuff, but can help you to know how to do that too. Some of my favorite baking books, two are from Cheryl Day, who answered a baking question on last week's podcast. Another great book is from Erin McDowell. It's called The Fearless Baker. And Stella Parks's book, Brave Tart, is incredible and really explains everything so beautifully. So get yourself one of those and learn from someone who knows.
So your next question is interesting. It is a non-food question. Mare Key Merck asks, how do you push out negative thoughts from your mind?
Wow. I would say I don't know that I always push them out. I try more to understand where they're coming from. And for me, honestly, therapy really helps. Talking to you, Grace, helps a lot. And cooking also really helps me. It's helped me my whole life to kind of maintain a sort of positive attitude and really just give myself space and time to think about things. You know, cooking is physical and it's tangible. It helps me be really present. It also automatically kind of puts me in a place and kind of mind frame of gratitude. I always feel really thankful for everything I have when I'm cooking. So that helps. I hope that helps you too.
And to wrap us up today, Kathy Stools wants to know, what is your favorite type of bread?
So this is really the most difficult question. I love all bread, but if I had to choose just one, the first that comes to mind is a really great challah bread, preferably just torn apart with my hands. So thank you all for your questions. Thank you, Grace, for asking them and for answering the one about tofu.
Anytime.
And if you have a question for me, or honestly a question for Grace, just send me a DM on Instagram at Tertian or drop an email to keepcalmandcookonpodcast@gmail.com. Before I head out, just a quick shout out to Zana Africa Foundation, an organization that Hawa introduced me to. Zana Africa supports adolescent girls in Kenya to stay in school by delivering reproductive health education and sanitary pads. They envision a world where girls in East Africa live healthy, safe, educated lives while defining their own purpose, a world in which menstrual health management is recognized as a human right and the onset of puberty as the most effective time to engage girls in a range of personal health decisions. What really moves me about their work is how simple, proactive, and effective it is. They provide the products that so many of us take for granted in the United States, and in doing so, they eliminate a barrier for a girl to attend school. Just like Michelle Obama has pointed out over and over again, the stats show that when you educate a girl, you educate a family, a community, and a country. To learn more about Zana Africa and how you can support their work, head over to zanaafrica.org. That's ZANAAfrica.org. Thanks for tuning into this episode of Keep Calm and Cook On. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And take a minute to rate and review the show. It really makes a difference to help others find it. And because nothing is more powerful than word of mouth, please let a friend or family member know about the show. I am so glad to have you all in my community, and I appreciate that you welcome me into yours. For more information about me and my work, head over to juliatertian.com. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Tertian. Thanks again to OXO for making this episode possible. OXO makes many of the kitchen tools that I trust the most. To find out more about OXO and their products, head over to OXO.com. That's OXO.com. I'm Julia Tertian, and I'll catch you next time. Until then, take care.